session number 9253, reel 5.
Mr. Jack Dorgan, Reel 5. Could you complete the story about your officer?
Yes. As I said, Captain Milburn was drilling the company and Lord Armstrong's son, the Honourable Watson Armstrong, was throwing, passing on the order, and I, as platoon sergeant, whispered in a loud whisper the required order. Captain Milburn must have heard it, and we could see that he was angry, and in a very loud, firm voice says, "Mr. Armstrong, you're a bloody fool." The whole company held their breath, and then the Honourable Watson Armstrong stood up, saluted and said, "Yes, sir." And that broke the ice. Everybody burst out laughing. Even Captain Milburn had to smile, and all was well.
During this early period, since you've introduced the topic of your officer, what did you think of your officer? Did you respect him?
The Honourable Watson Armstrong was very well liked. Very well liked indeed. By nature, he was a kindly man, as was his father. I knew his father, Lord Armstrong, because he was the president of the Boy Scout Association of Northumberland, and I met Lord Armstrong, what is Armstrong's father, many, many times at Craigside, up in the Cheviots, where he allowed my scout troop to camp.
But did you feel his son had the necessary qualities to be an effective officer, or did you just think it was a situation based on his status?
Well, I don't know if I had any views on the matter, but we accepted Lord Armstrong as our officer and were willing to go wherever he gave the order. We were willing to follow him at any time because we knew that whatever order he gave would be... It would be fair and just and nothing unnecessary.
How did you get on with your NCOs during this early period before the war started?
Before the war started? Not too well. In the Territorial Army, when I joined in 1911, I did 3 years before the war started, and all the NCOs, lance corporals, corporals and sergeants, in Ashenden Company were older men. There was no young fellas as the senior NCOs, and we soldiers in the main were young fellas. That would be when I joined in 1918, I would be 20, I don't know. We're all young fellas, the soldiers, and these officers, of course, naturally, they kept together as NCOs, and whenever possible, they kept themselves away from we young soldiers. In fact, we all had the sort of feeling that in the Ashenden Company, and I expect it would be the same elsewhere, I don't know, there was the NCOs, who were all the older men, and then there was we young soldiers. We didn't seem to have anything in common with these old NCOs, and we resented them. And I think we were right, because when war was declared, and the 7th Battalion went overseas to Flanders, there was only one or two, I can't remember many at all, of the older NCOs going overseas. We all had the chance to go, or perhaps they hadn't which was for overseas, because you remember the territorial army was only for home defence. In any case, we went overseas with very few of the older NCOs.
Did the NCOs enforce an over harsh discipline on you or something like that?
No. We accepted them as NCOs and we accepted them as the army routine whenever orders was given. I don't think any of they were, you see, outside of the territorial army, they worked in the pits the same as we did.
Did they have it? What sort of disciplinary measures would they have which they could use? Because with it being a volunteer territorial force, how did they enforce the discipline? What punishments did they use?
No punishment, but partly in the days before we went overseas. No punishment at all. I don't know, really. I mean, just you could deduct day's pay. They could recommend to their officers, but that was all. Different matter, of course, when we went overseas.
How about the other ranks, your sort of friends in the ranks? You got on well with them, it sounds as if you did. Could you?
Oh, we were all pals, old friends. Many of us worked together in the pits.
So there was a very good spirit?
Oh, yes, there was a good spirit. In all the companies, as far as I could see, in those days, before we went overseas, we didn't see much of the other companies except when we went in the fortnightly camps.
I'll come to the camps. The drill you were talking about earlier.
The what?
The drilling you did. Did you find your church brigade training, lads brigade, had been very useful in this, or?
Well, I don't know. I never thought, but I suppose we did, yes. Oh, yes, we must have. Yes.
You said you went on shooting, you had some shooting training, rifle training. Could you tell me about that? This is before the war.
Before the war, yes. At regular intervals during the year, Ashton and Company, we used to go to Strensel. Strensel had a rifle range, and we used to do rifle shooting. We would do rifle shooting from way back about 800 yards. And then we advance another 100 yards, 700, 600, 500, until we were 100 yards. And to encourage keenness in shooting, there used to be competitions. And, of course, in the army, there was extra pay for the good shots, riflemen. Me, I never... I was a good shot, but I was never not in the top quality with my rifle, but I was a good shot, but that was all. You see, my background, being a scout leader, I was sort of taken on by the battalion to be in charge of the battalion scouts. Now,
how did they actually train you in shooting?
Well, of course, the Lee-Enfield rifle, which we had then, and which we took to France with us, we kept the same rifle all the way through the Lee-Enfield. The Lee-Enfield rifle had a magazine down at the side which contained 5 rifle bullets in a cartridge. And you slipped the cartridge, easily done, just like that. And then by using your lever on your Lee-Enfield rifle, a bullet would come up out of the cartridge into the breech and it was ready for shooting. Well, we used to practice that in the drill hall at home without, you know, dummy cartridges until we were very proficient in it. And we were slick as anything as regards quickness in rifle shooting, so that when any orders were given for shooting, concentrated shooting, a fair amount of rifle fire could be concentrated on any one spot almost at once. Well, very good, all battalion, all company, and I expect all the battalion would be the same.
Did you go any route marches during this period?
In training, before the war.
Before the war started?
Oh, yes. We never did many route marches as so from Ashington, from the drill hall. I can't remember ever doing any route marches when we were at Ashington. But at the weekend camps, there would always be a short route march during the weekend camps, and there were several weekend camps every year. But at the fortnight's training, and we had 3 years before the war started, when we had a fortnight's camp, a brigade camp, the 4th Battalion, 5th Battalion, 6th Battalion, 7th Battalion, Northumberland Fusiliers, comprised the 149th Brigade, and the brigade always camped together as a brigade. The 3 years before the war, we did 2 years at Scarborough and 1 year at Widlington at the seaside, a fortnight each time.
What did you do in the camps? Could you tell me more about it?
These fortnightly camps? Well, we always looked forward to the fortnightly camps because we always enjoyed it. We enjoyed those camps. First of all, of course, it took us away from mining, from our job as a coal miner. It took us away from Ashington and we went to the seaside, which was a treat in itself, going to Scarborough, going to Bridlington. And the whole brigade would be camped in a field outside of the town in bell tents. Bell tents would hold 10 or 12 men, each with a ground sheet and two blankets, palliasse to sleep on. Palliasse, of course, is a sort of a mattress filled full of straw, a white canvas. And we did first of all in the morning would be an hour with a PT instructor, the physical trained instructor, shirts off, all shirts off, and then your trousers and putties. We wore putties in those days, and you know what putties are. Then we did first in the morning, 7 o'clock every morning, out into the open air. And it would be as near to the sea coast as possible, so the sea breezes would blow on us. Always remember, we never liked that early turnout at 7 o'clock. But before the hour was over, we really enjoyed it because our PT instructors were of the best. I have a great admiration for the PT instructors in that First World War. I don't know if it's looking back now, I think it's because I was, in 1918, a PT instructor myself. And, in fact, I was attached at Aldershot to the physical training corps. However, and the PT instructor were distinguishable because they wore a red and black jersey. I understand they do. Still to today, I was talking to some fellows one day, and they said, yes, the PT instructor still has the red and black jerseys on. They were very distinctive. PT instructors, as I remember them, they represented the discipline of the British Army. They always conducted themselves as if they were it. When you spoke to a PT instructor, they're all sergeants, you stood to attention to speak to a PT instructor at any time.
And this was even before the war, while you were at the seaside camps?
This is the fortnightly camps. And after an hour doing PT exercises and jumping and so on, We had all wet. We came back and we had to shave, dress, and then breakfast. And then the day's work started. Always had the brigade, the four battalions, were all parade. I think all officers loved that, having the orders on parade in the morning. But the day always started around 8:30 or so on parade, lined up in our platoons and companies, and then the battalions, and then the whole of the brigade. And then it would be either a route march. We generally seem to have a route march most days. And then after that, in the afternoon, after the dinner, by the way, we always served a good breakfast. Our army cooks at those fortnightly camps before the war, they always believed in feeding as well. We always sort of fed well.
What sort of food would it be?
Well, breakfast was bacon and an egg and a dip, and as much tea as you wanted, and as much bread dipped in the grease. We always enjoyed our breakfast. The Territorial Army believed in feeding the soldiers. Dinner invariably was what do you mean? Not soup.
Stew.
I couldn't remember the word. It was stew. Invariably, it was stew, and then that would be followed by treacle pudding. Mostly treacle. All I remember was treacle pudding. I expect we had other kinds of pudding, I don't know. But it was a solid type of pudding. We're all young fellas, and all hungry for every meal, and we enjoyed it. Tea? Well, in the fortnightly camps, some of the fellas never bothered with tea because they wanted to get out, because at 5 o'clock you were released from duties and you could go out into town at 5 o'clock. But the tea would be bread, butter and jam. I remember the jars of jam of stone, about 14 inches high, stone jar of jam. We had ample and solid food. No supper, of course. The fortnightly camps...
What did you do in the afternoon between dinner and...
Bayonet fighting, mainly. Tremendous lot of bayonet fighting. We learned to be... With all the Enfield rifle and the bayonet on the end, you stand to attention, and then you get the order, fix bayonets. And we used to practice individually, and then in unison as a platoon to fix your bayonet. It was a proper drill, you know, and we all had to do it together. We all had to do it as quickly as possible, and we seemed to do a tremendous lot of training for that. Never used my bayonet when I went abroad. Funny that, because we did so much in England.
What about tactical training? Did you do any of that at the camps?
At what?
Tactical training, you know, exercises with other units and...
Oh, yes. There was always some exercise in the afternoons, sometimes in the morning too, when they didn't have a route march. You used to have mock exercises, you know, mock battles and so on.
Could you describe?
I was always special on those jobs because, as I said, being a scout leader, I was appointed to be in charge of the battalion scouts, the whole of the battalion scouts. I was given a lance corporal's stripe, and I wore the fleur-de-lis badge above the stripe, which is a sign of the physical training school. And I was very proud of that.
When did that happen? What year was that?
Before the war.
Do you remember the year?
Oh, I don't know, it would be perhaps the second year. I had to get established the first year, 1911. But I remember I was I did, you know, many camps and weekend camps and so on. Yes, with my battalion scouts, 16 of us, May 17, we were always used as the enemy. And we would go perhaps out an hour or so beforehand when there was a route march. And in the fields around Scarborough, Bridlington, my orders were to wait until the battalion or the, if it was a company, was going along a country road with very high hedges, as thick as possible the hedges had to be. And then me and my battalion scouts, who would be lying in an extended order across the fields, 100 yards or a couple of hundred yards away in front, extended on each side of the road, we'd open fire, rifle fire, with dummy cartridges on our battalion. And as soon as the battalion officers heard the rifle fire, they themselves didn't know where it was coming from. It was only me. I decided that. And I always chose the most difficult for the troops. That was my orders. Because as soon as the rifle fire came, the battalion, which was in column of fours on the road, would, number one company, would extend over to the right, number two to the left, number three to the right, number four to the left, and so on, all the way down the column. And they had to, each line of fours or two lines of fours, they would pick up a man, put him his back inside the hedge, and push him through the hedge to make a gap. And they all followed him through that gap. One company to the right, one to the left. As soon as they got through the hedge, by bursting through the hedge with the weakest parts and making the gaps, they would get into extended order, right across the field, doubling up with a rifle in their hand, running as fast as they can, extending out and forward all the time until the whole of the company, which was on the right, say, would be in very long extended order, perhaps extending over a couple of fields to the right. The next company would be the same to the left, but always advancing forward. Now, my scouts and I, as soon as that happened, we retreated to the next field hedge and opened fire again, so that more or less the battalion, which would be then in extended order and right and left, advancing forward, would be under fire, rifle fire, as they went forward. It was in my judgment, left to me, nobody else, because nobody else knew what part of the countryside. I used to study the countryside to see where was the best ideas, so that we avoided villages for this exercise. And we did that exercise regularly. And we would retreat back to the next hedges, open fire again, and so on. We only retired maybe about three different fields, and the poor battalion soldiers would be advancing forward all the time, going, because they had to want to get out into extent to keep the line as straight as possible on either left or right going forward. And after we had let them through three or four fields, my scouts and I, we disappeared. We were finished for the day. But it meant we would have to get right away around, out of sight of the battalion, who were still going forward in the fields. Sometimes better was going fully a mile out, a way around, and we used to make our way back to Gosford Park, and no, not Gosford Park.
The camp.
Back to the camp. And on the way back to the camp, on the way back to the camp, well, that was well into the afternoon, and we always seemed, we were on our own. I never collected the battalion scouts. I just left them on their own to make their way back to camp, wherever it was. And we all seemed to make for any village that was there. And they're all mining villages, mostly up in Northumberland. And the miners are well noted for their kindness and very charitable people. Men would be at work, of course, but the housewives would be at home. And we always used to say, any chance of a cup of tea? And there was a cup of tea ready. So we always made for the villages and had a cup of tea with some of the villagers before we went back to camp.
Yeah, you did that as well when you were at Gosforth Park, I presume.
Oh, we did that more so, yes.
So
yes.
You did that at both places?
Yeah. Just a continuation.
I just want to ask two or three questions. Firstly, when you were in peacetime doing that, did you have any complaints from farmers about just, you know, breaking through hedges, running across fields?
Of course, I never had any complaints, no. If they made any complaints, they would make them to the authorities. But my scouts and I, we never encountered any opposition from anybody, no, I don't know. I suppose in those days, you know, the inhabitants of Northumberland, or when we were in Scarborough and Bridlington, they just accepted that it was natural for them to accept the orders of the military.
Well, how were your scouts selected before the war started? How did you pick them out?
Well, it was rather difficult, you know. I was given little opportunity myself to select them. In my own company, I did select my own in my own company. But when it came to the other companies, I just had to accept what the officers decided. Mostly, in fact, practically all were volunteers. They're all fellows who, a little bit independent of spirit, you know, out of the ordinary run of soldiers. I find that even in those far-off days, the soldiers of those days were just willing to accept orders and go forward without any initiative of their own. But my scouts were the type of fellas, like myself, a bit independent. And they, like me, thought it was an opportunity to get out of the general rut, if you understand me.
What sort of qualities would you look for, besides this independence, when you were picking your own scouts in Ashington?
First, strength and activity. The man's got to be strong, the man's got to be active and nimble and able to look after himself. Simply that.
Were many of them ex-Boy Scouts?
Yes. In my own company, they were all Scouts. I had a tendency to pick them, of course. Oh, yes, they all had a liking for the country.